When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
Yes, mess!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Not just on Talk Radio though, but live streaming to you across the world on YouTube, on Facebook and on Twitter as well. We have reached the end of yet another tumultuous week here in the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Not just because we've been live streaming it every single day and you've all been very much enjoying watching me as well as listening to me, but the House of Commons has actually passed the Brexit withdrawal bill with barely a peep coming out of the building, and the groundbreaking legislation which became so troublesome and tedious for the government last year hasn't even made the front pages of the newspapers this morning. In fact, if you look at the Times, on page 15, way down the bottom on the right-hand side, you'll see a tiny little story that says, oh, by the way, the government's Brexit legislation was passed by the House of Commons. Incredible, isn't it? It's almost as if nothing ever actually happened in the last 3 years that held us all up from doing this. We'll be talking to some Labour Party people coming up a bit later on, because guess what? All of the people running to be the leader of the Labour Party all voted against the Brexit withdrawal bill. What a collection of planks. We'll find out why they did that. Meanwhile, the Harry and Meghan crisis continues as royal aides scamper about trying to repair the damage they wreaked on the institution yesterday. The Times is reporting this morning that the couple's estimates of their own finances are wildly inaccurate, and that the public provide far more money to them than they are making out. Yesterday they were busy telling us that they only receive 5% of their income from the sovereign grant, but in fact all foreign trips are paid for from public funds, and the cost of that has doubled since Harry and Meghan appeared on the scene, because you know how they like to fly on a plane from time to time. They spend half their life flying in planes, despite the fact that they're telling us that we shouldn't do it. It also pays for all their staff, which includes 6 people at Frogmore Cottage alone. They've got a housekeeper, they've got 2 personal assistants, they've got 2 orderlies, whatever they are, and they've got a nanny. Can anyone tell me what the nanny does when Meghan Markle and baby Archie are not actually there? Because, of course, she's not actually there. It's also emerged that their Sussex royal firm has trademarked over 100 items, from socks to magazines, as long ago as last summer. Meghan, of course, has already left the country and returned to her new home in Canada. These hits just keep on coming. Maybe she won't come back. That'd be great, wouldn't it? 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on, we'll be investigating the shooting down of that Ukrainian airline by the Iranians. We'll be looking at the Labour leadership race, of course, and we'll be revealing why Oxford is the latest city to charge you for driving in a zero-emission zone. And because it's Friday, it's time for yet another sparkling edition of the Perrier Awards. And the good news is, Con's not here, so Martha's going to be doing them. So I know you'll love it. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, and watching me as well, right here on the fastest growing radio station in the world. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, we haven't quite got over yet the sort of the quake that was started yesterday, or the night before yesterday, I suppose, technically, by Harry and Meghan, who decided to out themselves as taking a step back from royal duties, surprising not only Buckingham Palace and all of the courtiers there, but also the Queen, his own grandmother, who had urged him not to do it, not to make such an announcement, and not to actually upset the apple cart. But upset the apple cart they have definitely done. The reverberations are going around the world. Meghan Markle has been here for a couple of days and returned to Canada. It turns out that when they did come back, they left baby Archie in the care of their nanny over there. Now, I don't know whether they're still staying or whether she's still staying in the £12 million mansion over by Vancouver Island. I have no idea where she actually is. But certainly the reverberations and the stories in the papers this morning are quite incredible. when you think about the amounts of money that they are spending from the public purse. It's a complete and utter nonsense, as the Times says this morning, to suggest that in some way only 5% of the sovereign grant contributes to the running of their office, because that's simply not true. Let's talk to Ingrid Seward, editor-in-chief at Majesty magazine, a woman who we've spoken to many times before about Meghan and Harry, and probably somebody who is as gobsmacked by this as the rest of us are. Ingrid, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
This really is quite a remarkable state of affairs. I mean, I thought I was coming in this morning and I thought to myself, I wonder how big the story is going to be today. I think in some ways it might even be bigger today than it was yesterday.
Well, it just seems to run and run, and it seems to have absolutely taken over from Brexit, which I'm sure quite a lot of people are relieved about.
That is one good thing, I have to say.
That is one good thing. But I did point out that the all foreign tours, for instance, that royals go on, well, you know, they're working, not holidays, when they're working officially on behalf of the Crown and the Queen, they are paid for by the taxpayer, and the Foreign Office gives them an allowance. They also give them a clothing allowance.
Yeah. It's incredible. I mean, also, the fact that we've discovered this morning that they have six members of staff at Frogmore Cottage alone, completely separate from the staff that they have running their office. I mean, that's quite a lot of people.
It is a lot of people for a couple that said that they wanted to live quietly.
Mm.
It certainly is a lot of people. And I don't know whether they've got a nanny there and a nanny in Canada, but I would imagine they probably only got one nanny. But, you know, royals are inclined to have two, because when one's off...
Yes.
And if they have royal duties to do, they can't just tuck the baby under their arm and take them.
Well, isn't it interesting as well, though, that they've got these kind of fanciful ideas about how they want to live their lives sort of independently, financially, and all the rest of it. But when she comes back to Britain with Prince Harry, she leaves the baby over in Canada, because I seem to remember when they went to Africa, they travelled with an entourage of 13. Including a hairdresser. Now, I'm not going to complain about that. I'm sure if you're a princess or a duchess and you need to be on camera all the time, you should have a hairdresser with you. But let's not pretend that they've got an ordinary lifestyle.
No, they certainly haven't got an ordinary lifestyle. And I think although us in the know, you know, knew a lot more about it than the general public, I think the general public are going to be quite shocked about the number of people that they employ.
Yes.
And how much it all costs.
Well, exactly right, because you've got a piece in the Times today, "This hasty ego trip will have far-reaching consequences," is the headline on the top of it. Yeah, I mean, the amount of money, I've already been seeing pieces about, from the police, for example, that we would have to spend in addition if they moved to Canada because of the royal protection budgets and all of that, is quite prodigious.
Well, I mean, if they move to Canada, which we are not sure about, I think, you know, it's possible that the bill for their security could fall upon the Canadian people, because it's part of the Commonwealth. It's very, you know, when Buckingham Palace says it's complicated, it's very complicated.
It really is.
We don't even know. It really is. We don't even know where they intend to live yet. They might, you know, there's talk that they might want to live in California. They might want to be in New York, or they might want to be in Canada. We don't know.
And judging from the story I read this morning as well about these different trademarks, more than 100 trademarks, items that have been registered as much as 6 months ago, this conversation has been going on for a while.
Well, there was, there was a few lines in the papers. I think it was before Christmas when they registered the trademark. There was a few little lines saying that they'd registered the trademark Sussex Royal, which in fact is the name of a potato.
How unusual.
Yes, and I don't know what the Sussex Royal potato growers feel about it, but it is the name of potato, which I found quite amusing.
Yeah.
And but they've applied for, you know, over 100 items that they can I suppose they can use in their way of getting some money.
Yeah, but it's all a bit tawdry, isn't it? Because I've also been led to believe that there is some kind of a clause not contract, effectively, but in their sort of way that they're supposed to conduct themselves, that they're not meant to get themselves involved in things which might be considered to be a little bit sort of grubby.
Well, the royal family try not to get involved in commerce because,
right.
And this is Prince Philip said this years and years ago, it doesn't work.
Mm.
You've either got to go and do something boring like be an accountant, or go into the church or go into the military. And basically, royals have always gone into the military.
Yes. You can't really start hawking around sweatshirts and hoodies and socks.
Well, look what happened to Fergie when she started doing it.
Yeah, I know.
And she wasn't even a member of the royal family at the time.
No, that was a good example, actually. I think a lot of people have forgotten about that.
Yes, I mean, she had a lot of flack, and she was actually divorced from Andrew, I think, when she started hawking her name around America.
Mm. Absolutely right.
Edward started his film company, Ardent.
Yes.
You know, which was very respectable and quite successful, but he was then accused of trading on his name, which, of course, he was, because every film and TV show he made was about the royal family.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And also, the only reason anybody wanted to work with him was because he was a member of that royal family and hoped to get a sort of, you know, personal invite to Buckingham Palace. But you say in your piece that you think the Queen will take the view that the problem is for Prince Charles to sort out. So is that why we're seeing a piece on the front page of the Times about how he's threatening to halt their money?
Well, I think, you know, the Queen's 93. I think that... And she's very together mentally, but... She's got to be slightly frail physically. I mean, she's not Superwoman.
No.
Well, she might be Superwoman.
Well, you can see when she came out twice to do the Queen's speech there last year, you know, she's not as robust physically as she was.
I mean, she's amazing for 93,
yeah.
But it really is the duty, I feel, of her son, you know, who's the future king, to sort out his son.
Mm. Absolutely.
And the Queen doesn't like moral confrontation, especially with her grandchildren, and she's very fond of Prince Harry. She wants to try and make it work for him. It's important to her that a solution be found.
But the trouble is, of course, that, you know, this is such a sort of a shocking move that they've tried to make and that they appear to have done against all the advice that they were given, even by the Queen herself, that it's not entirely clear what it is that they want, is it?
I don't think anyone quite knows what they want. What I'm certain about is I don't think they know what they want. I mean, it's very difficult to have one foot in the royal family and one foot out. It's never worked
right.
before.
And what exactly is it that's been so difficult for them? I mean, you know, you've got the sort of Philip Pullmans of this world complaining about the ghastliness and the foul nature of Britain, and this is why they have to leave because everyone's racist, which is clearly tosh, right? People do not treat Meghan Markle differently because of the colour of her skin. That is absolutely not true. And the idea that that the people who support him are saying, oh, it's very good for him to look after his own mental health, he's a very frail individual, you know, all of that may well be true. However... what exactly is it that's happened that's been so upsetting to them? I can't fathom that.
Well, I don't think anybody can.
Mm.
I mean, they are complaining about their treatment at the hands of the media, but the royal media, the people that... These, you know, kids that go out every day and follow what the royals do and they're part of the rota, they work very hard.
Yeah.
They report accurately, you know, because they don't want to diss on their friends. Somebody goes in, say Meghan is in a classroom talking to children, a member of the press will go in, they'll report what she says, they'll come back, they'll tell the rest of the reporters what she said,
yeah.
And then they write it.
Right.
There's no spin on that.
No, exactly. And the whole point of being in the royal family is that you have a relationship with the press. And, I mean, during the times of Princess Diana, which you'll remember as well as I do, you know, there was an awful lot of spin, counter-spin, briefings going on behind closed doors. You know, there's not really much of that going on these days.
No, there isn't. I mean, and Diana had her own favourite journalist, and why shouldn't she? But the thing that Harry and Meghan have to deal with now is social media.
Yeah.
And they are... the first sort of glamorous royal, young royals that have really come a cropper with social media, because it's to my mind, and I'm not an expert on all this, it's the anonymous people that are so nasty and cruel.
Yes.
And are the ones that are racist. And I don't think the majority of the British people are.
I mean, but if you're going to complain that you're getting horrible people on Twitter saying horrible things about you, well, that's what Twitter is, I'm afraid. I mean, we all have it. We all get to put up with it. And we sometimes all get fed up with it. But it doesn't mean that you just give up on what it is that your job is. And you suddenly go, oh, I just can't face it anymore. I'm just not going to do it anymore.
Well, you don't. I mean, I know that various MPs have had a terrible time.
Yeah.
From Twitter and social media. And have wanted. I think they even have given up. But I don't see that Harry and Meghan are any worse off than anyone else in a very high-profile position.
Yes. And so what happens now? Because as far as we know, Meghan Markle went back to Canada to be with her son, Archie. Presumably Harry is still here. But if he flies back to Canada, I mean, there's a possibility, I'm assuming, that we don't really see them very much anymore.
Well, I think the first thing that happens, and presumably this was going on yesterday, is that all the royal houses, if you like. I mean, that sounds a bit dramatic and sort of Tudor. But they were, you know, the Cambridges and you know, the Wessexes and the people that are around and supporting the Queen, they'll come in and they will sort of say, well, let's try and work this out. And the yeah. Queen's senior courtiers have to find a solution. That is what they're there for.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, where does it go from here? Because there's clearly a massive rift between both Harry and Meghan and everybody else. And so I'm not even sure who's even talking to them at this point.
I think that the Queen did say, I think, or, I mean, not publicly, obviously, but she said, you know, a solution has to be found. We cannot have a repeat of what happened to Diana. You know, we have to find a solution. We can't have Meghan and Harry rattling around the world, you know, selling off royal secrets.
No, quite. And doing books and doing television shows. I mean, she's already been offered a part in Housewives of Beverly Hills, which I presume she will not.
I don't know.
Yes, no, she has. Apparently the director's already given an interview to People magazine where he said, you know, if Meghan wants to be part of our fantastic franchise, Housewives of Beverly Hills, she'd be more than welcome. I mean, you know, there's talk of them being like...
Well, I know Diana was offered a film part. She was offered a part in The Bodyguard, I think.
Was she?
I know. She was offered a huge film part. Right. Obviously. I mean, obviously she just thought it was a joke.
Right. But, I mean, the talk of this pair becoming like the Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, who have apparently signed a deal for £65 million for publishing various different books. I mean, they're not the Obamas. With the best will in the world, you know, he is not the brightest tool in the box, and I don't think she is either.
Well, I rather agree. I don't think she's as bright as we all thought she was.
No.
Because I thought she's a very bright lady. But, I mean, the fact that somehow Harry has failed to enable her to understand how the monarchy works. Mm. I don't know if that's her fault or his fault or just general, but if he could have explained to her the history of the royal family and the constitution and how it works, you know, this might not have been, you know, so difficult for her.
I think he must bear some of the blame for it because, you know, it's quite fashionable.
I think he must, yes.
I think it's quite fashionable to sort of blame Meghan for somehow, you know, twisting his arm and turning him into this completely different individual. But, I mean, he is a grown man. He has served in the armed forces. He has flown helicopters in Afghanistan in hot zones. I mean, he's not a complete kind of ingenue. And so he must have taken this decision with her, knowing what it would have done.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we all loved Harry and, you know, we all remember how he was, what fun he was, so charming. Well, he still is, I'm sure, but he seems like... he doesn't seem like a happy man at all.
He really doesn't.
I mean, you'd have to be, you know, be blind to imagine that he was if you look at the photographs of him.
Well, without wishing to kind of turn it into a soap opera, which they've already kind of done anyway, everybody knows that when you have rifts with members of your family, we all know people that have done it. Some of us have been involved in them as well. You know, it's more stressful than not, isn't it?
I think it's been very stressful. It's obviously been very stressful for them. But, you know, the thing is, the monarchy isn't something you can walk in and out of.
Mm.
And historically, if you think about it, historically, it's always been a bit difficult being a princess. There was never any sort of training school for princesses. Diana had a very hard time when she first joined the royal family.
Yeah.
Nobody told her what to
do. Well, she really struggled to adapt to it, and she found it really quite debilitating, didn't she? She became a bulimic. She became somebody who had real mental health problems herself for a period of time until she kind of blossomed after the divorce and realised what she was missing.
Absolutely. But, I mean, I think that, you know, Diana found it very difficult at the beginning, and she couldn't understand why, you know, that her fiancé was never there. He was always travelling, and she was left on her own in Buckingham Palace. And she, you know, she had no friends. She had a lot of difficulties, but she said there was. I remember her saying, "There's no training school for princesses."
No, there really isn't. And I mean, to do it yesterday as well on Kate's birthday, I found to be particularly distasteful because whatever they were planning, they must have known it was her birthday that day.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any friendship lost there.
But isn't that tragic, though, in a way?
It's very sad because I think that, you know, Kate could have really, really helped Meghan. I think the person that has helped Meghan has been Sophie Wessex.
Mm.
But whether that's Sophie doing it on her own bat or at the Queen's request, I don't know.
Yeah.
I imagine the Queen's probably said to Sophie, look, you're a sensible girl, you're a bit older, you've been through it, you know, try and help her.
Yeah. So finally, Ingrid, what is it that the Queen can sort of eke out of Charles that they can somehow come to an arrangement? You know, from reading some of the stories this morning, it appears as though they're trying to find some kind of accommodation which works for everybody. But, I mean, I for the life of me can't work out what that would be.
I don't think they can either.
Mm.
I think they, you know, I think that they've got to go through this. I mean, Charles is up in Scotland. I don't know if he's still up to him. He is. The Queen is at Sandringham. You know, she stays there till after the anniversary of her late father's death, which is the 6th of February. I mean, they're all over the place. They're not exactly sitting in Buckingham Palace. But it really is for their senior advisers to try and work something out and come up with some ideas.
Yeah, it's a really awful situation, and they've created it. You know, it hasn't been created by anybody else but them.
No, I mean, and I think, you know, that, you know, they're the ones that are going to sort of pay for it, if you like, in the end. I don't mean physically pay for it, but sort of emotionally pay for it,
yeah,
in the end.
No, absolutely. Well, I dare say you and I will be speaking about it for quite some time to come, Ingrid. Thank you very much indeed. Ingrid Seward, Editor-in-Chief of Majesty Magazine, biographer of William and Harry as well. How about this, right, for some interesting information? All overseas visits, officially, are paid for by the sovereign grant. That means you and I. Contributions from the host country will also come into effect sometimes, but only the cost of journeys costing more than £15,000 are detailed in the royal accounts. In October 2018, Harry and Meghan completed a tour of Australia, New Zealand, Tonga, and Fiji. Travel costs, including a planning trip by staff, came to £81,000. That's just one trip, OK? The numbers have doubled in terms of the amount of money spent since Harry and Meghan joined the royal family. There's a surprise. State visits, however, have remained the same, which tells you that all of their holidays are being paid for by you, OK? You think you don't care about this story? You call me now, 0344 499 1000. We should still be cutting them off. It's what I said yesterday. It's what I'm going to say today. You can listen to us here on Talk Radio, but you can also watch us live on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Good morning, welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio, not just on Talk Radio now, but also live-streamed on YouTube, live-streamed on Facebook, and live-streamed as well on Twitter. So you can watch us as well as listening to us, which for some people is an absolute joy, and for others is literally a step too far. But you can join in the debate on YouTube, because there's an awful lot of people already commenting on the things that we're talking about. Harry and Meghan, of course, is the big story. Right now, though, we're going to talk about the Labour Party, because Annalise Dodds has joined us. She's the Labour MP for Oxford East, and she's going to be supporting Keir Starmer for leader. One of the things I suppose we should point out is that every single person who is standing for the Labour Party leadership voted against the Brexit withdrawal bill yesterday as it passed through into the House of Lords. Annalise, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks very much, Mike.
No, I presume you also voted against the Brexit withdrawal bill yesterday, did you?
Well, I certainly did, because actually within that bill, many of the assurances that we'd been given before were completely removed. So, you know, we were told, for example, that we wouldn't have a rollback on working rights. That's been chucked. We were told that we wouldn't have any changes to environmental legislation that would keep in step with the rest of the EU. Again, that's been thrown out. Things like child refugees as well, you know, when we were told that, you know, we won't have any shift away from the existing position. Again, we've moved away from that with this withdrawal bill. So, you know, I really felt that I didn't have any choice, because
we're matching up to... On the first two of those things, we've got better workers' rights in this country than anybody else has in Europe. And also, we've got better environmental record than any other country in Europe as well.
Well, with respect, I don't think we would have been taken to court a number of times over our dirty year by the EU if we had better standards than everywhere else. And on working rights, sadly, on some issues like agency workers, in fact, it took a very long time for the UK to catch up with what the EU was requiring. Now, I'm not saying that we can't have an independent policy on both of those areas, but what I find disappointing is that we were told, as I said before, that there wouldn't be any rollback and that that would actually be written into the bill. clearly the current Prime Minister isn't willing to do that.
But your current leader, Jeremy Corbyn, spent a great deal of time banging on about chlorinated chicken coming here from the United States of America, and the Department for the Environment announced yesterday that actually that wouldn't be the case and that the rules against chlorinated chicken would be maintained after Brexit.
Well, I'm not sure exactly how they can promise that when they've also said, right across government, that they're seeking a trade deal with the United States. And the evidence, unfortunately, about previous negotiations isn't very positive in this regard, because when we were actually a member of the EU and when we're looking at trade deals like TTIP, that big trade deal between the EU and the US, a number of other countries said that they would rule out things like, you know, coverage of health services, etc., from the trade deal for them. UK government wasn't willing to do that under Conservative rule. So I'm afraid, you know, I don't just look at...
So you don't believe the Department of the Environment, in other words?
Well, I want to see that being written into legislation, because otherwise...
Well, it's already in legislation and they're saying that they're not going to take it out. So basically the rules which currently exist will continue to exist. That's what they said yesterday.
Well, I would like to see a proper guarantee of that, and I don't understand why they're not willing to do that. I mean,
I'll send you the piece from The Guardian, shall I?
I know that they've been saying there's not going to be any change, but what I want to know is, if they say there's not going to be any change, why aren't they willing to guarantee it in legislation? Because they didn't do that when it came to other trade deals that were negotiated, in fact, with the EU, where different countries in the EU could have different prescriptions. And as I say, the UK, under Conservative rule, refused to do things that a number of other countries were doing to protect, for example...
So are you still of the opinion, as many of your fellow Labour MPs were before the election, that catastrophe is about to befall the nation on February the 1st?
Well, I don't think there's going to be catastrophe on February the 1st because, of course, we've got a transition period. I am disturbed at the amount of public money that has been spent preparing for the various different eventualities. I think that's been largely very unfortunate when we've had lots and lots of other, you know, pretty much extreme requirements for public spending in the UK, when we really need that money to be going into our NHS, for example. Now, what I'm concerned about is that...
The NHS gets £150 billion a year or something ridiculous, doesn't it?
Pardon?
Doesn't the NHS get something like £150 billion a year?
Well, yeah, it does, but it could
well, you can't tell me that's
many
not
more
enough.
Millions. Many,
you can't tell me that's not enough money, surely?
Well, actually, I think a lot of people listening to this will have experienced long waiting times, will have experienced...
Yeah, but it's not because of a lack of money, though, Annalise. It's because of a lack of efficiency, surely.
It is partly, I think, because of a lack of money, because we've had an increase in demand. And if you talk to healthcare professionals, what they're saying is they're having now to ration services that they didn't
have. Yeah, but the problem for all of this, Annalise, is you're making the same arguments that you were all making before the election, right? With the fantasy economics of Jeremy Corbyn and the ludicrous amounts of money that you were going to unleash on the economy. Nobody believed you. Nobody thought you were worth voting for. You had the worst result since 1935 for any Labour Party. You know, it's all gone. You know, you're going to have to do something different.
Well, with respect, if that was the case, then we wouldn't have seen the Conservatives finally catching up and realising that there was a need for additional public spending on things like health, education and policing, which we've been arguing for a very long time and which we were told by the Tories was not necessary. Finally, they woke up to that. Now, obviously, I'm pleased that they finally caught up with that. But on the issue of waste, what I would like to see them doing as a government is saying that, for example, we won't see large amounts of public money going into the profits of private companies, which we have seen in the National Health Service. I've seen it in my local area, where we've seen privatisation pulling money out of services. That's not acceptable, and that needs to stop. And we haven't had that recognition yet from the Conservative government. So,
won't get it, Annalise, because you have no leverage anymore. You don't have any power in this Parliament. You have a Tory government with a majority of 80, right? There's nothing you can do.
Well, I don't think that is a recipe for just saying, right, let's just throw in the towel and not keep trying to represent our communities. Actually, it means that we've got to be even harder working, that we've got to organise more, that we've got to make sure that communities that have been forgotten are actually getting their voice heard in Parliament.
But the communities that have been forgotten did have their voices heard. They voted for other parties. So surely what you need to do is find better policies that they will vote for.
Well, I was just... saying before you started to speak again, that actually I think we have got to listen to those people. I mean, I'm out every Sunday morning in my constituency or in other parts of the country on the doorstep listening to what people have got to say. You know, I'm certainly trying to learn from that and use that to shape the future of the Labour Party. And I think every other person putting themselves forward to be the leader for the party should be doing that. And I think when people do that, we can learn what the problems were and how we need to change. So, yes, of course, we've got to listen to people. But I think, you know, there are really, really significant issues as well facing our country that we need to be advocating for in Parliament, because otherwise we'll just see this current government have a free run. I think on a number of issues, that would be pretty catastrophic.
Well, a lot of people think that they're the right people to be in charge, and that's why they got voted in such big numbers. But why do you think Keir Starmer is the answer rather than any of the other candidates?
Well, I think all the candidates have got a lot to offer, actually. We've been having, I think, very good meetings and hustings currently between all the different candidates. It's been done in a very good atmosphere, positive atmosphere. Again, trying to learn from what went wrong at the last general election, how we can change as a result of that. I think that Keir is somebody who, wherever you're talking to people in the whole country, somebody who people know and who many, many people respect, even if they haven't agreed with every single position that he's taken. They do respect him. And, you know, I campaigned right across the country at the last general election, you know, from the Midlands, spoke to people in Scotland, was in Yorkshire, was in London, obviously in the South East as well, where I'm based. He was the person who people mentioned over and over again. You know, if they didn't like our current leader, Jeremy, I would say, well, who do you think would be a better leader? And very, very often people would come back and say, oh, yeah, that chap, what's his name? Yeah, Keir Starmer. Yeah, I think he's good. That was the message that I was getting back right across the country.
But so was he not also the man who constructed the Brexit policy, which was the sort of sitting on the fence policy, which was so catastrophic for you as a party in the north of England?
I don't think we should tie what happened in the north of England just down to Brexit. Look, that issue is very polarising. Whatever attitude Labour had taken on that topic, we would have lost some people's support if they were voting purely on the basis of Brexit. If we'd had a more pro-Brexit position, we would have potentially lost people who voted to remain. And obviously, the Conservative Party had tried to position itself as not just pro-Brexit, but in fact potentially willing to countenance a no-deal Brexit. Well, that's something that the Labour Party hopefully would never, ever be in a position to do, because we know the impact it could have on our communities and particularly on manufacturing. So it was going to be a difficult issue for us, whichever way we turned. You know, we ended up with a compromise position, which I still think actually was the right way forward. We've got to set the new reality clearly that, you know, we're not going to be able to put that forward anymore. You know, we are leaving the EU. That's very, very clear now, given the election result. So I certainly don't think that that is going to be a major issue for Keir. I think he's somebody who has got a message that can resonate right across the country, and not just on Brexit, on a whole bunch of other issues as well.
And what will his policy be on a European Union then?
Well, as I say, we've got a new reality now. I mean, I'm not his spokesperson on Brexit issues, but I think he's recognising as well that we're in a new situation now. Obviously, we are leaving the EU. It's very, very important that as we do so, we don't see those commitments made by the Conservatives junked. You know, they said that we could have a form of Brexit where we won't be losing jobs, where we won't have a reduction in working rights and living standards. So we need to make sure that they're held to account on that. And I think, you know, that's particularly critical, actually, for many people living in the north of England, those areas that have already experienced a wave of deindustrialisation. If we see more jobs going in those communities, then that would be really appalling.
OK, and one final question for you, Annalise. What do you think we should do with Meghan Markle and Prince Harry?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's very interesting what they're trying to do, actually. I've been interested and, you know, quite inspired by some of their activism around environmental issues and protecting wildlife, etc. I mean, I suppose it's very difficult. It's a difficult thing for the royal family itself to come to terms with. But, you know, all I would say is I just hope, you know, I'd want to wish them all the best for the future, as well as everybody else.
Do you want to keep paying them if they leave the country?
Well, I think they've said, haven't they, that they want to eventually move towards self-sufficiency or something like that.
Yeah, they say that, yeah. They'd like to be financially independent. Wouldn't that be marvellous, eh?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm totally honest with you, it's not something that I've followed every single in and out of, you know, around. My mum certainly would have done. She was a big, big kind of monarchist. But I guess for me, I just hope that that they get to a better place from their point of view, and that it's something that's acceptable to the rest of our family as well. And, you know, that the kind of positive charity work is continued. I think that's really critical, whatever happens.
OK. Annalise Dodds, thank you very much indeed. Labour and Cooperative MP for Oxford East, backing Keir Starmer over the leadership battle for the Labour Party. But let's face it, Labour Party really haven't got anywhere to go, have they? The Labour Party were voted down and out in most places where they used to hold very, very large amounts of support. Now they don't have any support apart from in places like Putney, Millionaires Row, where the Champagne Socialists all hang out. So cheerio, I don't think they're going to be very relevant for 5 years, minimum. This is Talk Radio.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, we were talking just before the break to Lisa Francesca Nand about taking kids on holidays, grown-up kids indeed, and Johnny has tweeted us. He says, my dad took me and my brother to Disneyland when we were 14 and 15, and he spent the whole time bellowing at us that we should be enjoying ourselves. Mickey Mouse at 15. Get real, Dad. Well, I suppose I can see your point. Let's talk to Mike Rutherford and find out what is happening in this country and why it's becoming sort of so difficult now to go anywhere in a car without having to pay some kind of fine. Mike, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Hello, Michael. Happy New Year and all that.
Yes, absolutely right. Now, I mean, we've talked about this before. We talked about Bristol going diesel-free. We've talked about York apparently wanting to an entirely pedestrianised city centre. Now Oxford seems to be the latest one to jump on the bandwagon.
Yep. They're going to introduce this charge of £10 for cars that are in their eyes not right, and vans, of course, and trucks. And although, you know, we may not be friends of trucking companies particularly. They can be a pain sometimes, can't they, for car drivers, trucks. But, you know, we've got to understand, especially after the period we've just been through with all the deliveries, etc., all the food and prints and everything else that's delivered, everything that we own is delivered by truck. And yet Oxford Council seem to be declaring war on trucks and saying they've got to be zero emission, and there are none on the market. I mean, there is nothing commercially available with cars because they're built in such higher volumes, of course, for individuals. There are zero emission, at source at least, cars. There are no zero emission trucks available, HGVs, for example.
No.
And so the trucking industry is saying, well, you're telling us to drive in vehicles that the vehicle manufacturing, the global vehicle manufacturing industry, doesn't produce.
Well, exactly right. And I've spoken to some couriers and people who are worried about what's going to happen in Bristol because, of course, diesel vehicles are all going to be banned from there. And a lot of people drive a diesel van. There is apparently an electric van or a hybrid van, but it's really expensive.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the point. With whether it, same goes for cars, you know. You're talking about at least, for an equivalent car, at least a 50% price increase,
yeah.
if not more, for the same car.
Right.
I mean, so you've got to pay through the nose for these things. Vans, yeah, there are so-called zero emission. We've got to use this term, briefly explain what we mean by zero emission. That means there's no emission, there's no pollution coming from the vehicle being used on the road in the city centre. But go down the road a bit to the local power station, of course you're creating more power at the power station to create the electricity to charge the car. So it's not true to say there's zero emission. You're just transferring the emissions or the pollutants from the centre of town to the outskirts of town.
And also, they keep repeating this mantra, and I've got a quote here from Tom Hayes, who rather pompously calls himself Cabinet Member for the Environment at Oxford City Council, right? He says, "We must clean up the lethal air we're all breathing. Oxford's zero emission zone will help make 2020 the year we make a game-changing difference." Well, I had this conversation with an official from York City Council, right? And I was able to get my hands on an actual air quality report in which it was revealed that the nitrous oxide, which they all complain about, which is killing us all, in the streets of York is actually lower than the recommended sort of high level that you should worry about by the United Nations. And it was lower by about 50%. I said, actually, you've got some of the cleanest air in York in the entire country, so you don't even need to do it.
Right. I mean, and you know, there is so much hypocrisy around this issue. I mean, has Oxford Council declared that none of their council vehicles will be diesel vehicles, that they'll all be emission free?
Yeah, and where are they going to find that? And where are they going to find that money? Because, funnily enough, the day after Bristol Council said that they were going to go diesel free, it turned out that they had a load of diesel vans in their council car park.
And probably cars as well. And
yeah.
I think that the number I wrote about it, the number was staggeringly high. I mean, what are they going to do about their diesel-powered refuse trucks that go around at least once a week, clogging up the streets, picking up people's bin bags? Are they going to be banned? Are they going to be fined? I mean, the other thing, Mike, we've got to ask is this. Or we've got to challenge them. Let's lay down the challenge.
Mm.
Let's to Oxford. That's fine. If you honestly believe, as you say, that whether they're cars, vans or trucks are polluting the air to such a lethal extent, that's the word they use, we're causing lethal damage to the residents of Oxford. If you really believe that, then why the hell are you allowing people to pay a tenner to come in and create that lethal air? If you really believed it, you would say, we don't care if you pay £10 to come in, we don't care if you pay fines, we don't care if you offer us big, big money. You're not coming in because we believe you're polluting the air. The reason they don't do that is because they want the £10 from the car driver. They want the fines from the from those people who don't pay. So what they're really saying is, if you can afford to, you're welcome to come in and pollute the air. If you can't afford it, too bad.
Yes.
I mean, they need to have the courage of their convictions. They need to stick to their principles, and they need to also practice what they preach by saying there will no longer be an Oxford City Council vehicle that runs on what we consider to be pollutant, the old-fashioned, old-school technology,
right.
Diesel, for example. Let them set a fine example by converting their entire fleet.
Yeah, but hang on.
Hundreds of vehicles.
Well, that's all very well, Mike, but if they do that, then they're probably going to charge us more money for the council tax on the grounds that they have to completely replenish their fleet of vehicles, because they haven't got any money. Don't forget, the problem with all these do-gooders and these eco-planks is that they have to take the money from us in order to do all this stuff.
Well, I'm throwing down these challenges, Mike, as you can tell, in a slightly mischievous way, because they won't rise to the bait. They will not be doing these things. They will continue to contradict themselves. They will continue to commit the act of gross hypocrisy. They will continue to grab the money from people. On the one hand, you know, your air is killing our children. But on the other hand, if you pay us a tenner, we'll allow you to pollute the air. I mean, it is unbelievable.
Mm.
And I think we are reaching the stage, sadly. I'd like to cheer you up and tell you that this is not going to catch on across Britain. But the money, the income, the revenue is just too much for them to resist.
Mm.
And I can see other other councils doing it as well.
Oh, I can I can see them all doing it, Mike. But here's the other one, right? What about the other facts that we know? And this was definitely said to me at the time when I was interviewing the York guy. Everybody knows that when you pedestrianise the centre of a city, a shopping centre in particular, it basically doesn't boost the shopping footfall. It actually reduces it. Therefore, more shops will go out of business. They won't be able to get their stuff delivered properly anyway. And the place becomes a ghost town.
Well, quite. I mean, you know, these trucks that the city councils are objecting to are trucks that have the temerity, HGV trucks that have the temerity to go to supermarkets so that people can get their fresh groceries and their turkeys at Christmas and their presents in the stores, etc. I mean, that's what the trucks are for. You know, people are not, truck drivers are not running around in circles for the fun of it.
No.
And of course, we you know, if there is one of tragedies of our current times is the death of the high street, and what this will do, inevitably, it will have people saying to themselves, well, I'm just not going to drive into Oxford anymore. And whereas I used to go and do my Christmas shopping or go out for dinner or whatever or go to the cinema in Oxford, we're going to go to the out-of-town locations instead. Or we're going to use that famous online service to buy products instead of buying them from the high street. So I think the retailers of Oxford should be, and London come to that, and some of these other cities we talked about, Bristol, etc. I think the retailers, the big retailers, should be saying to the council, look, enough is enough. Stop pushing people away from our shopping centres, our retail areas. We want them coming in. We don't want to deter them.
Also, by doing this, right, they will make, if you say, and what I think you did say, and I think you're right, that more people will buy stuff online. How do you think that gets to your house? Somebody brings it in a truck. So it's not as if you're actually reducing the emissions at all. You're probably increasing them.
Quite. And I think that is it. If, you know, if Oxford and other councils really want to look at an issue that is increasingly worrying, it's the number of, not I've got anything against white van men, you know, if they can earn a living out of it, great for them. And so this is not anti-white van man, but it is kind of crazy that we're out and about doing our stuff, and yet we insist on having a van come to our door when perhaps we've driven past a shop that day where where we could have popped in and bought something.
Yeah.
And instead of that, the new way of doing things is to have an extra vehicle on the road, usually a white van, to deliver a little box.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nuts.
Well, it is. And also, you know people as well as I do, I'm sure, who are getting maybe three or four different deliveries in any given day. So it's not just one van that's for delivery stuff. There's thousands of them.
I actually saw a lady recently, Mike. I won't name the store, but it was one of those frozen food stores where she went in, bought, I think, the required amount. I think it was 30 quid's worth of stuff. And as she walked out, all I was in there for was to buy a carton of milk.
Right.
As she walked out, she left everything behind. And I thought, this is what's going on? So I paid for my bottle of milk, and I saw her leave all this stuff behind. And she went outside, and she climbed into her estate car. And I actually said to her, I know this is odd, but do you realise you paid for your shopping and left it there in the bags? And she said, no, I'll have a man deliver that to me later today.
Nice.
And she drove off in her estate car. So that is nuts.
That's bonkers, isn't it?
We all agree with that.
That is absolutely bonkers. But yeah, but the whole idea of free delivery and this whole thing, this concept that we now have that if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can actually order something at 10 o'clock in the morning and it can be delivered to you by 1. You know, well, yeah, you could have gone out and bought it as well and you could have had it home by 11. You know what I mean? It's just crazy to me.
Yeah, and in fairness to the politicians and the cities like Oxford and other residential areas and business, yeah, let's look at how many extra vans are on the road and why they're on the road and how many dead miles they do, and let's do something about that. In fact, go further still, and let's have a proper study. When was the last time there was a proper study into transport and the movement of people and why people are on the road? When was the last time there was an incentive from employers to say, come to us as an employee, present your case to us, and if you can convince us, we'll let you work from home one or two days a week. So you come in, you come in 3 days a week, not five.
Yeah.
We reduce the traffic on the roads immediately by 40% if you're taking people off the roads for a couple of days.
But it's as you say, it's not about taking cars off the road, it's about collecting money. If I, and I have had to do this on occasion because for some reason or other, you know, London's underground system has collapsed or the Jubilee line isn't working or something. I don't live very far from the office here, but there's no car parking anywhere near here at all. There's an NCP car park. If I have to come in my car from literally about 2 miles away, I have to pay a congestion charge and I have to pay about 35 to 40 quid to park the car for about 4 or 5 hours, right? So it's basically £50 a day for me to drive in and out of the city. Now, I don't particularly want to drive in and out of the city, and I certainly don't want to spend, you know, upwards of £250 a week doing so. But some people do. And if they do, the powers that be make all the money.
Well, and also, it's you know, the counter-argument, to play devil's advocate, might be, well, you know, on a big fat salary like yours, you can afford it. Now, I don't. It's not my argument. That's what they would say.
But that doesn't make the air better, does it?
Well, quite. But even if you gave them the benefit of the doubt and said, all right, yeah, there are some people who can actually afford 50 quid a day. What about the people? I mean, I know from my own experience, Mike, when my son was a long-term resident at University College London Hospital.
Yeah.
What about people who have to be with their children in hospital? I mean, I'm not talking about a few days. I'm talking about weeks,
long
months,
term,
and half-based years. I mean, you know, you've got to pay £50 to park that car. What? Yeah. Why are you not taking public transport into London? Well, because we're going to a hospital, and very often we have an extremely ill child with us, and so we happen to be in a car. There are people who go into London for all sorts of reasons. What we shouldn't do is look at somebody who's driving a car and say, well, there's somebody who's got nothing better to do than to drive around in circles or car, or there's a fat cat going to work in his flash car. There are all kinds of reasons. You know, I went to a family funeral recently, and people were coming through London, out the other side of London, or from all parts of the country, in cars to attend a much-loved elderly relative who passed away. I mean, people are in cars for all kinds of reasons. Charity workers use cars. And you know what? There often aren't exemptions for charity vehicles trying to get into these city centres with these punitive schemes. You know, the charity vehicles are required to pay the same sort of financial penalties that Joe Soap.
Yeah. Right?
So, I mean, it's a brutal money-raising exercise, and we'd be daft if we didn't just recognise it as such and deal with it as such and call them out. Let's make a beeline for the Oxfords and the Bristols and London. Let's not forget London here. They're in this. Obviously, in London, we're talking about Sadiq Khan. They're in this to raise revenue, because if they really wanted to do something about air quality in London and York and Bristol and Oxford, they'd tackle all the air pollutant problems, not just the ones relating to the vehicles on the road.
No, you're absolutely right. Mike, thanks very much indeed. Imagine if you're a courier driver as well. We spoke to a couple of them down in Bristol who won't be able to deliver anything into the centre of Bristol anymore. Here's Keith on the YouTube feed saying this. Gordon Brown promoted buying diesel cars when Labour was in power about 50 or so years ago. Well, actually, it wasn't that long ago, to be honest, but they did tell us that we should get them. Here's one from Ollie who says, we had 2 world wars, 5,000 plus nuclear tests, countless oil fires, volcanoes, and the flora and fauna still thrive. Well, also, this is complete and utter nonsense that we're all dying of air pollution problems because the air is so awful and horrible and ghastly. And then they want you to go down into the underground where it's apparently better. Really? 0344 499 1000 is the number. This is Talk Radio.
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
It's Friday, it's 12:34, and it's time for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Now, this is a world first, OK, because not only is this the first Perrier Awards of 2020, because we haven't done one yet, not only is it going to be presented by Marta Melagon, the extremely talented Spanish producer of this show, it is also the first time that it has ever been live-streamed to loads and loads of people on YouTube, on Facebook and on Twitter. So if you're not watching that, you need to be watching it now because you'll be able to see the Perriers in action as well as hearing them. So it's time, of course, now to do what I should have done before this, which is to welcome Marta to the studios. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
To the live stream of the Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Thank you very much. Did you notice that I got new music for the Perriers just to commemorate this occasion?
I did. I'm very pleased about that because it's a new year and yes, we might as well start as we mean to go on.
Yes.
So,
playing new music.
Over to you.
So, over to me, and I'm going to read my script. Good afternoon and welcome to the Perry Awards. This is where we look back over the week of the so-called Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio and choose our favourite moments. Now, as it's tradition, the first Perry goes to you, Mike, and we start with Premonition of the Week.
But let's talk now to a man that knows a lot more about it than any of us, Lord Tony Berkeley, former Deputy Chairman of the Independent Review, I should say. Sorry, I can't say that. I'll try again. Oka V review into HS2, okay? There's the first Perrier of the week, and it's only 12:18 on Monday.
There
we are. I mean, I was right, I suppose. I finally got something right in that piece of speech.
In the piece of
Oka view.
To be fair, I wouldn't have known how to say that.
No, I'm pretty sure I got his name wrong as well, because I heard everybody else referring to him as Lord Berkeley rather than Berkeley.
Well, I did speak to him beforehand, and he didn't correct me.
Okay.
So, and normally people do. When I say something wrong, which happens quite often.
Not that often.
Being Spanish and all that.
Yes.
But, he didn't correct me.
No, okay.
Anyway, he was a very feisty little Berkeley, because he came on to talk about HS2, and he wins the Perrier for fighting his own corner.
Network rail lines into Euston and closing up for a year or two. I mean, it just doesn't bear thinking about.
I thought you were supposed to get off the train.
Let me just finish with old Oak Common.
I mean... See, I quite like it when people do that, because what I don't want them to do is think that I've somehow kept interrupting them. As Annalise Dodds earlier today, when she said, you know, well, I was about to say that until you... And she didn't say interrupted me until you started talking again.
Well, but it's just another way of saying it.
Yeah, but it's called a conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, I appreciate that, because it also doesn't happen very often, and it's a source of amusement behind the glass.
Of course.
I should say.
Yeah.
And we go from behind the glass to all the way... I didn't think this through. I'm ad-libbing. Like, through the radio, on the other side of the radio, our lovely callers who we love and cherish. We're just going to go through some of them. Geraldine Crew wins a Perrier for delivering the insult of the week.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I tried watching you on YouTube yesterday, but I switched it off because you look like a BBC presenter. It was so unnerving.
I do not look like a BBC. I've never been so insulted in my life. How dare you say I look like a BBC presenter?
You look like you're lining up to read the news.
Shocking, that, isn't it?
To be fair, you do, though.
Do I?
Yeah.
I've never seen anyone at the BBC looking like this.
I wouldn't say like a BBC
today.
Presenter specifically, because, you know, other broadcasting companies are available.
There are.
But I would say you look like a newsreader, like
do
you're
I?
Ready
okay.
to.
I have read the news once. I did it once on BBC Scotland, and everybody fell about laughing because I was getting messages from people saying, "Why is Michael Caine reading the news?"
Oh, well, listen, I'm sure you've had worse things said to you.
Yes, I have.
Earlier in the week, Peterborough was voted the worst place to live in the UK. Caller Graham lives there and phoned us to tell us what it's like. And he also came up with the idea of the week.
Maybe we could twin with the moon. There's no atmosphere there either.
Very good.
There you go.
That is quite a good idea.
There you go. It is quite a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't work out whether he was phoning up to say Peterborough was a horrible place or that actually it was all right.
Well, that was a conversation we had behind the glass, actually.
Yeah.
Because she said something to our lovely assistant producer this week, Holly, and then he said something different to me.
Yeah.
So we just thought he changed his mind.
He was kind of all over the place, really. Yeah. But very, very good call, nonetheless.
Oh, yeah, very good call. Mm. And another one that was very good well.
I'm just watching you on the live stream. It seems to be slightly delayed for some reason, so we've just started doing it on the live stream.
Oh, gosh.
Even though we've been actually doing it for a little while.
Oh, gosh.
But never mind. So that means if you're watching the live stream, you're slightly behind. But don't worry about
that. It's fine. You'll get there in the end.
Yeah. I can tell you I've already won the first one.
Oh, well. Who would have thought? Ross in Sussex called us to make the case that he deserves to work with Dominic Cummings in Downing Street. However, the call did not start in the best possible way. It's a classic. It's the wrong namer of the week.
Let's go to the phones, though. Talk to Russ, who's in Sussex. Hello, Russ.
Hello, Graham.
It's a classic mistake.
It happens all the time.
It's happened before.
Yeah.
And this is not the only award for Russ. He also wins Funny Noise of the Week.
Well, my head is going so fast because I've been active and everything is done. What can I do next?
Right.
So
That was a good noise.
Whatever that was.
I enjoyed that. Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a sort of motorcycle crossed with a, I don't know, a wind tunnel effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe we should ask him permission to clip that and use that for our bank of sound effects.
We could do that. You That'd know. Be good, yeah. Play it at the end of every call we don't like.
For example.
I can't do it, actually. Like,
I can't do that either.
You have
I'm
to
not
have
even
quite
going to
moist,
try.
Moistened lips to do that, which mine are not at the moment.
Well, if you need some lip gloss, just let me know.
I'll go and get
I've
some.
I've got some in, right. in the control room. Anyway,
it's quite unnerving watching you doing this on a screen while you're sitting opposite me.
Well, maybe don't stop watching it then.
No, I have to watch it because that's where the feed okay. and the people, the comments are.
Okay. Well, you'll get used to it, I'm
There
sure.
are some nice comments. There are some quite rude ones as well. So I'm not going to read any of those out.
Well.
I mean, not rude, horrible rude,
hey,
but just, you know.
What can I say?
I know.
Another Perry for you, Mike.
Thank you.
On Wednesday, you spoke to James Chiaverini from Il Portico Restaurant about food trends for 2020.
Yeah.
And you told us how you get a little bit annoyed at the amount of food displayed in shops. Congratulations, you win the Perrier Award for Exaggeration of the Week.
And people were talking about there being less food in the shops, and I actually said, well, that's probably a good thing. We don't need as much food as we see every single day. You know, I don't need to see, you know, acres and acres and acres of potatoes and carrots in front of me in a supermarket.
You see what's happening.
You see, I slightly over-egged that one.
Well, I don't know. I live to a very next to a very big supermarket.
Yes.
And I don't think it's acres and acres
and
acres.
It's not acres. No, it's not. No. But sometimes you use speech in a way to make a point. Here's one from Lone Ranger who says, she has a sense of humour who can also smile. She can't be a liberal.
Okay.
That's about you. And Keith says, I like this bubbly young lady.
Oh, thank you very much.
There you go.
Appreciate the
very
compliment.
Very popular.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Next, newsreader Rachel Jewell wins the Perry for her diplomatic skills.
Let's get some news headlines with Rachel Jewell.
Good afternoon. It's 3 minutes past midday. Coming up, UK looking to de-escalate.
Yeah, we were a bit late to the news.
Let me explain what happened here. Rachel basically just told you off on national radio for going to the break 3 minutes late.
3 minutes late. Well, you know, I wasn't aware of the time, I'm afraid. I think we had a very important guest at the time that had run a little bit late.
I think it was a studio guest as well, which I think is a special occasion. But you know, she did it in a very classy way, and I admired her, and I'm going to start using her technique.
Good for you. Now, I can tell you that you've massively boosted the numbers of people watching the live feed already.
There you go.
So, you know, maybe you should do more.
Well, maybe
we should do the whole show.
Yeah, why not? Talk to the boss, put in a good word.
Yes.
Brexit Party MEP, Anne Widdecombe, join us to talk about Brexit and the fact that she will soon be unemployed. And for that, she wins the Perry for Job Seeker of the Week.
Well, I wish you'd come back and form some kind of party here, Anne, you know, because I think your voice is very much needed still in the political landscape. So at least if you do give it all up in Brussels, will you come back and do something here?
Well, I'm looking at... Do you mean on talk radio?
Well, on talk radio if you must, or indeed and out there for the greater good. I mean, we just talk here, you know, we don't actually do anything.
Yeah.
I left that bit in as well.
Yeah, thank you. Because, you know, it's good to be self-deprecating. Yeah. Of course, we do a great deal here, which is not just about talking. But the thing about I found interesting about Anne Widdecombe there was that she clearly thinks I run talk radio.
Yes.
Which, of course, I don't.
No.
Well, at least not yet.
No, exactly. Maybe one day.
Maybe.
But, you know, if you're listening, I always need people on the phones or, you know, printing scripts and
bit
stuff.
Bit of research, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's so always things to do.
I can always do with a little bit of that.
A runner, I'm sure, maybe, you know, get the guests from downstairs.
Yeah, that's always helpful. And she's got a great contacts book that, you know, if she wants to bring onto the table.
Well, she has done this show, hasn't she?
She did
this show for a week. Was it last year?
I think it was maybe last summer. The year before,
Well, the year before, that's right. Yeah, when I went to Devon. I seem to remember,
You've been to Devon?
I went to Devon,
I think you've just been to Scotland.
I have just been to Scotland, I don't talk about it much. I was in California last year.
I talk
about that quite a lot.
Oh, good. And see, sometimes I just don't pay attention.
I know.
Anyway, another one for you, Mike.
Yes.
You've been doing this job for a very long time. Some would argue that you're very good at it. And
I'm glad you went that way with it. I thought you were going to say it's time you stopped.
No. I would never. But for balance, some would argue that you're not very good at it. But that's them told.
Yes.
Because this next clip is going to show you your best presenter skills.
Notwithstanding the fact that we leave the European Union at the end of January, and we were told it was all going to go horribly wrong, we wouldn't be able to ever go anywhere ever again, apparently we'll be able to go to Ireland now.
Well, first of all, good morning and thank you for having me on the show.
Sorry, I should have introduced you.
I was going to say...
My apologies.
I mean, who hasn't forgotten to introduce the studio guest before? It happened just now.
It did.
But you acknowledge your teeny tiny mistake.
I do.
And you gave us the worst excuse of the week.
stage.
Well, you know what the problem is you came in too early and we've already had a very nice chat before we started chatting, and that's so I'd forgotten that nobody else was part of that.
So you've basically blamed it on the guest that you forgot to introduce them.
Well, because we had already been having a conversation, you see, so that's, yes, sometimes leads you into a bad place. Now, look, there's one here, right, that says, from Neil, Graham, I didn't realise you were so old. Now, listen, I've been called a second-hand car. Graham, I presume he's talking to me by using my last name.
Yeah.
It's a thing they used to do at school, you know, they would call you by your last name.
Okay.
But then here's one from Browsing. He says, Graham isn't old, he's matured to perfection.
Oh, that's nice.
I'll take that.
That's one for your Twitter bio.
Matured to perfection.
Yeah.
Like a fine wine.
Like a cheese.
Cheese. I'm not going into cheese again. No. That was that conversation with Johnny Seifert that was going absolutely nowhere.
Well, wait for it. We'll be hearing from that. But before that, travel guru Simon Calder wins a Perrier for the reaction of the week.
And if you think that in your or my lifetime this HS2 thing is going to be up and running, I think I'm afraid that we are going to be sorely disappointed.
Bless him.
That didn't sound good.
I mean, I feel that. I feel his pain.
I do.
But, you know, it's hard.
Mm.
And I hope you enjoy the following clip as much as I've enjoyed putting it together. Congratulations. You win a Perrier Award for your impression of Meghan Markle.
Oh, thank you. Here's some House of Windsor sheets that you could back. The love story of all time. We're going to Canada. It's beautiful because they've been working so hard. Nobody's helped us. We're all alone. Yes, I can't believe it. Oh my God. It's so sad. Isn't it sad? We're leaving. We're going to Canada. If they didn't hit the icebergs on the way over. So it's so good, she's already gone.
I know.
You know, I got rid of her.
I claim that as a victory for
victory for the Independent Republic, yes.
As we do. Anyway, I'm going to race through this because we're running out of time.
We're running a bit late,
I'm talking too much.
Get on with it.
Earlier in the week, Johnny Seifert, showbiz editor, popped in to talk about Love Island because obviously no one else was available. And you worth share a Perrier for the most ridiculous discussion of the week.
They're very vacuous as well, aren't they? I mean, that's the problem.
And they've always...
was it not last year where they had the conversation about cheese?
And, trees.
Cheese.
Oh, cheese.
And Brexit.
Trees and Brexit.
Well, didn't they talk about it? Well, you're supposed to know all this stuff.
Yeah, trees and Brexit, 2 years ago.
Cheese.
Trees.
Not trees, no cheese.
No, it was trees.
No, it was cheese. The woman didn't know whether there was going to be any more cheese coming into the country because of Brexit.
Oh, cheese.
Cheese, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Trees. Anyway, yeah.
Let's find out which one of you was right.
Okay.
It was to leave the EU, so we wouldn't be part of Europe.
EU,
which
yeah,
would
yeah,
mean, like, definitely. Welfare and...
This is great, by
like
the way.
Like, things we trade with. Would be cut down.
So does that mean we won't have any trees?
Trees?
Oh.
No.
That's
got nothing to do with it, babe. That's
why wouldn't we have trees?
Cheese.
I can't work it out.
Yeah, so one of them says cheese and one of them says trees.
So it's both and so neither at the
both.
Same time.
Yeah, so the good news is, actually, we will both have trees and cheese after Brexit. I think we can be pretty sure about that.
Can we have cheese growing on trees?
Cheese trees?
Yes.
Well, you get cheese plants. You can get cheese plants, but funnily enough, they don't actually produce any cheese. I don't even know why they call them cheese plants.
Well, that's fake news then.
It is.
Anyway.
That's enough about cheese.
Finally, the last Perrier also goes to you, Mike, and this is for Joke of the Week.
They're famous because they know Tyga. You know the famous rapper Tyga who used to go out with one of the Jenners?
What? Who? Tyga.
Tyga. You know, T-Y-G-A.
No. T-I-G-A. That's not how you spell Tyga.
Well, it is when you're down with the kids.
Okay.
It's an interesting lineup this year because it's a brand new year.
Is he striped?
Brand new decade.
What are you laughing for?
He never answered the question.
He didn't. I presume he's not.
I presume so.
Right.
I can only tell you that. Anyway, that's it for the Perrier Awards.
That was an absolute triumph. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There'll be more next week.
The Perrier Awards on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.